Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of series 3 of This Thing On. I'm Alex Petrovich and I'm here with my co-host Joe Foster.
Hello.
Producer Jade.
Hi.
And our fantastic guest this month, our first non-comedian guest actually, Mark the Vet.
Hello, and by non-comedian, do you mean I shouldn't try and even try and be funny?
Please.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right.
But no, a very funny man. Vets are funny.
Some of them are hilarious.
Especially this guy.
They were all busy and they got me.
How are you, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, how are you guys?
Very good.
I'm very good, Mark. Fantastic. Enjoying the sun. You look very sunny.
I've been out and about in Brighton. Yeah.
You're dressed like you're wearing cargo shorts. You're dressed like a man who's going down the beach for a couple of tinnies.
There you go.
Have you been down the beach from there?
No, I haven't been today. I had a little walk though.
Really?
On the beach, yeah.
What have you been up to today? Go on, tell us everything.
What did I do today? I did some chores. I did some sort of boring chores, like bank and stuff. And then I have been writing and preparing a lecture I'm giving on Saturday in Estonia.
What city, Mark?
Tallinn.
Tallinn?
Yeah.
Is that the capital?
Yeah. And on the map, it's like the only city in Estonia, so I'm definitely heading there.
So, to all of our Estonian listeners, where can they find you?
In Tallinn.
Perfect. Tallinn.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say hello in Estonia. To all our Estonian listeners, guten
Tag. I'm good off the cuff, but I'm not that good.
Yeah. I'll have to do a bit of revision for my phraseology.
So what's the lecture in on Saturday?
I'm talking to the Federation of European Small Animal Veterinary Associations on Lucy's Law. So I'm doing a presentation on what's going on in the UK with regard to changing the law and ending puppy farm cruelty.
So that came off the back of like Pup Aid and stuff as well, didn't it? Do you want to tell us a bit about Pup Aid and Lucy's Law?
It's been a bit of a journey really. 2009, I ran a veterinary practice in Brighton, saw lots of sick puppies that were dying of parvovirus, and they were coming from licensed legal dealers, buying in from licensed legal puppy farms. Very cruel way of producing puppies, basically dogs bred in agricultural conditions either here or abroad, battery farmed and then sold without their mums, the pups sold without their mums from dealers and pet shops, etc. So I started a campaign. It started as Pup Aid, which was a celebrity judge dog show to raise awareness about it. And then about 4 or 5 years into that, I kind of realised that I had to try and change the law. Because 2 days of awareness, you know, the day before and the day after this dog show wasn't enough. So I went to Westminster and it was a bit like in Gladiator when they first go to Rome and they're looking around them going, what is this place? Looking up and looking around and going, oh my God.
Dressed as a Roman soldier now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when you've got no background in politics or law or history or English literature or any of those sort of classical subjects, it's very hard to know the process. Mm. So I kind of made it up as I went along, and in 2013, thanks to our lovely neighbour, actually very, very close neighbour here, Caroline Lucas, who gave me lots of advice after I'd given her advice about getting a rescue dog, and we did the first e-petition, and that got the 100,000 debated in Westminster, and then since then we've had the dog show every year, which has got bigger and bigger, and we've got, I think 10,000 people came last year. You know, Ricky Gervais and Brian May and Peter Egan and Elle McPherson and Sue Perkins and Rachel Riley and this never-ending list of celebrity support who come not because they're paid to, because they want to. Mm. And it's in Primrose Hill this year. It's on the 1st of September. So Pup Aid is there. And then we've got the campaign running in Westminster. So we had the debate in Westminster after the petition. We've been lobbying. I think I've been to Westminster about 300 times in the last 5 years. Now my meetings are in number 10, inside number 10, as well as with MPs. I was there yesterday with one of the ministers.
What's it like?
Number 10 is fascinating.
What does it smell of?
It smells of hope and promise. At the moment it does. It didn't when I first started going there, believe me. It smelled of despair and depression. But we are slowly changing stuff. We've exposed a lot of organisations that have been responsible for blocking behind the scenes. very disingenuously, very famous organisations as well, which a lot of people donate to, and using the media, using social media, obviously, as you know, on Twitter, and using the power of celebrity, the power of being a bit ballsy and challenging, and, you know, I couldn't have done any of this without people like Carrie Ad and Sarah Clover and Julia Carr and Philippa Robinson, campaigners, all of us who are doing it in our spare time. And basically we've taken on the four big charities in the UK, we've taken on the government, and we've taken on kind of the pet industry. And if the way things are going, it keeps that momentum, we could actually change the law this year. And Lucy's Law, which is a ban on the sale of commercial third parties of puppies, so pet shops and dealers, could come in the autumn, and it would mean that it would be illegal to sell a puppy without its mum away from where it was born. So it would force people to the breeder, so the breeders become accountable and transparent, or to a rescue centre. So it'll be a huge shift. It'll be at the end of puppy farming in the UK. The Washington Post did a piece about it the other day. Wow. So America's interested, and I've got meetings in the autumn with Humane Society of America. Going to Estonia this weekend, obviously, to talk about the European side of things. So Lucy, who was a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, who was a product of the puppy farm industry, she was a rescued breeding dog who died in 2016, who the campaign's obviously in honour of. She's got a Facebook page called Lucy the Rescue Cavalier. It's about 75,000 likes. She's like and this sounds very cliche and sounds very silly, but it's very true. She's like the Princess Diana of the dog world. Okay, when she died, first of all, she was seen with all these celebrities: Peter Egan, Ricky Gervais, Paul O'Grady, pictured raising awareness of rescue dogs and puppy farming. She died. There was this outpouring of grief on mainly Facebook, which was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. And of course, how do you combine banning third-party sales of puppies, which is kind of a mouthful, with the passing of probably one of the most loved dogs this country's ever known on social media? You called it Lucy's Law. And it's just been phenomenal. And it took off. We launched it in December 2017, last year. And it went viral. The Mirror have been our media partners. We've got phenomenal support from the media. And all of a sudden, you know, we did another e-petition, got 100,000 signatures in 13 days. Wow. It's a record for an animal welfare petition. It was debated. Every single MP bar one in the chamber who was representing, that MP was representing the organisation trying to block it.
Oh, really?
Who stormed out in a strop. And every MP called for Lucy's Law, and the minister summed up, and he was also listing the reasons why the government should ban third-party sales. So, and he was the minister that's constantly been sort of the other side of the fence to what we want. So we're making huge progress. It's a real show of attrition and stubbornness, and 9 years it's taken.
And it's all in your spare time or outside.
Yeah, you don't get paid for it. Spare time, you go to sleep thinking about it, wake up thinking about it. You, every single second of the day, you're conscious of it, whether it's the petition or a rally or Twitter or Facebook or emails going backwards and forwards from God knows how many MPs. But I think we're going to do it, touch wood. And if we do, it'll be the biggest positive change for dog welfare possibly in the world. Yeah, definitely in the UK.
How far along is the law?
So there was, we had the legislative journey at the moment means that the new laws for the Animal Welfare Act, all the tweaks, are going to come out in October, and they were all going ahead as planned without Lucy's Law because of these big organisations. And a few of them let it slip on social media, and one guy in a newspaper article that the kind of decision had been made not to implement Lucy's Law, which would be to license third-party sellers to a point where it's acceptable to sell puppies. Well, we know the damage is done before they even get to the seller, not just to the puppies, but to their mum as well. So it's an inappropriate activity. So however much you license a pet shop to sell puppies, it makes no difference to the animal welfare. And then I spotted this. I started having my meetings at Number 10 and managed to drive a wedge in the whole legislative journey, convinced Number 10 that we were right, this small bunch of campaigners were right, and all the organisations in the pet industry were wrong because they had these vested interests, which we believe that if you ban a puppy from a pet shop, it's going to lead to a ban on all animals sold as retail. So you can imagine the pet industry not wanting this to happen because they know that it could potentially lead to rabbits being banned, guinea pigs, rats, fish maybe. And also, of course, if you fix the problem of dysfunctional dogs, which fill the kennels of a lot of these big rescues, there's not going to be that many dogs to fill the kennels, and also there's going to be more rescue dogs adopted as an option. So of course their kennels are bare, and these big organisations that rely on dogs in their kennels to make sometimes £1 million a year turnover, and also these illegally smuggled pups coming in from the Eastern Europe, the Frenchies and the pugs, which are very cute and they make great PR campaigns, they can't be sold when they get here either. So you're ending PR campaigns that generate money and PR. You're ending the possibility of dysfunctional dogs filling these kennels. You're fixing the problem. And there's conspiracy around cancer charities who are terrified of the cure being found because of that precise reason. So the smaller charities and the mid-sized charities are all behind us. The MPs are all behind us, bar one. the celebrities, obviously, you know, Ricky and Rachel Riley and all these fantastic people are also behind us. So we've kind of ambushed the government, who've not got nowhere to go because they can always backslide, but it's becoming more harder and harder for them to do that. So we drove this wedge in on February the 8th this year. They launched what's called a call for evidence, a 3-month consultation, which basically halts the process. They ask for evidence and then they can continue with what they're doing, and of course the evidence has come back in our favour, and it looks like now that they're going to have to ban third party sales. Totally against the grain, totally against what all these organisations and the industry wanted. And it looks like the campaigners, 5 or 6 of us doing it in our spare time, after 9 years of work, have actually managed, again, fingers crossed, touch wood, whatever, to hopefully change the law, which should be revealed in autumn, maybe even before summer recess, maybe even at Pup Aid. It's mental.
Exciting times.
It's really exciting, especially for the dogs. And as you know, I mean, I'm a vet, and animal welfare always comes first. But to change something in law that protects dogs and can then be hopefully rolled out across the world will be exciting. Yeah. Very proud of it, actually.
I'm proud of you too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's exhausting. It's exhausting.
And dare I say it, I reckon Sir Mark the Vet.
Oh, listen, if any publicity raises the PR publicity of the campaign, brings more awareness to it, you know, great. I mean, I was in the government yesterday with one of the ministers, and we're talking about how to solve a lot of dog issues and how to get the messages out there. And it's really nice to be in the mix, if you like. You've got the minister there, you've got all the civil servants taking notes, a couple of MPs. And it's what I love about it most is I'm there representing the dogs rather than my organisation or having any vested interests with industry or connections. And it's really all I ever wanted to do was help animals. And when you're face to face with the minister or you're at number 10 with the director of legislation, or you've got a 2-hour debate in Westminster and the MPs are all agreeing with you. I mean, one MP the other day stood up, Justin Tomlinson from Swindon, Conservative. And he just did a little mini speech about me. It's like, get on with the debate. I mean, I'll take it, obviously. But it was like, it's insane. But I mean,
So supporting you, not slagging you
off. Honest, yeah. My God.
Pro or con? It's a douchebag.
Otherwise, I would have walked out of the shop. But it's fascinating. When I was on a stag do, this is the extent of it. I was on a stag do the weekend before in Lisbon, and I had to lobby 160 MPs, send them briefing packs, tweak all the emails, and you know it takes hours. This stuff, it's a lot of donkey work, a lot of repetition, but the results are now beginning to show for themselves, and if we change the law, it will be worth it.
What was it like to make her storm out?
It was fascinating.
Knowing that she's opposing you.
It was fascinating because
you could really, because she's probably in the position where she's probably going to hear people's opinions that aren't. Yeah, people going against what she says all the time.
But she had to do her bit to disrupt it. And the thing is, when you've got Tories, and at the time it was Chris Davis, who's the MP for Brecon, Zach Goldsmith, obviously for Richmond, quite high-profile MPs, and they were waiting for her to stand up, and every time she opened her mouth, they were like snipers. They were like, bam, bam, sit down. She stood up, bam, another one, down. Stormed out. So it was fascinating to watch the control we had over the debate,
the way it works, and
yeah, it was fascinating. But in direct contrast, if you like, 2014, where we were very green, we briefed MPs, but so had many other organisations, and every MP agreed with us, but the minister sort of rejected what the call was for. Same minister as well. So it's amazing in 4 years how you can completely turn the tables with the minister now agreeing with what we were saying.
And she was representing some of those bigger organisations.
The minister was on our side in the end, which is unheard of.
The MPs,
she was representing the organisation that's been probably the biggest disappointment and the biggest surprise in this whole process.
It's amazing how, until kind of uncovering that sort of underside of it, on the face of it, you'd just assume these charities are...
This is I think the biggest reveal, if you like, of the process of campaigning, is the surprise and the almost disgust, but definitely disappointment in some of these big organisations that pretend, and they do pretend, that they care or they're campaigning for change, or they, you know, all this money that they're taking in is going to improve animal welfare, when at the end of the day, if they fixed all the problems, they wouldn't have dysfunctional dogs that they can make money off. That's definitely been the biggest disappointment of the whole thing, but it's been the biggest reveal. And of course, when you out these guys, everyone hates you, because everyone in this country has grown up to know about these brands and to trust them. And of course, you're telling people that Santa Claus. most people don't realise that Superman is real. But Santa Claus, of course...
He's a big supporter.
Santa Claus, and people listening are over about 8 years old, aren't they? Doesn't exist. But it's the equivalent of telling people that Santa doesn't exist, because they've grown up believing in these organisations. And really, in a nutshell, if you imagine all these organisations, and we're talking three of the main big ones, and they've been around for, 700-800 years in total? Their turnover, some of them, over £1 million a year. They have the ear of the government, and the situation with dog welfare in the UK has never been worse. And you think, okay, that's a little bit suspicious, because if you really wanted to change stuff... it shouldn't take a bunch of campaigners like me who are doing it in their spare time with no resources, battling to get meetings with MPs and ministers to start with, no money and no sort of big PR companies or campaigns, and we're changing stuff and they haven't. And now they're looking a bit silly, because we've managed to do, or almost managed to do stuff. We've certainly raised more awareness than they've ever done, just by being a bit clever and using the resources we have and being creative.
How important has like Twitter and all that sort of celebrity power as well been?
Twitter's unbelievable for this, especially when you're doing an e-petition, especially with hashtags. And for example, Lucy's Law, one of the reasons I called it Lucy's Law, obviously because of Lucy, the hashtag is so simple. But people like Ricky Gervais, I mean, you get them retweeting petition links, and it does make a huge difference. Unilad did a mini documentary about what we've done as well just before. Zoella, you know, she shared the petition, and I think it went up something like 12,000 in an hour. Rachel O'Reilly, she did a little piece to camera and tweeted it, and that got us about 5,000. Claire Balding and Crufts coverage. We did a big thing at Crufts. It was Mother's Day, and we did this huge Mother's Day card with Lucy in the middle of it. And Claire Balding did this thing, told people to sign. Must have got 15,000 another hour. So it's all very strategic. It's bloody hard to do an e-petition and get it to 100,000, I've got to say. But the work that's gone into it, I mean, I'm fortunate to have a lot of big hitters that follow me, so you can DM them and ask them to do you a favour. Also, Pupaid on Twitter's got nearly 100,000, so there's a lot of people on there. But it's not easy. And you think with all the resources open to you, it's easy. It nearly kills you.
It requires an insane amount of...
It really does. And then, of course, it's the tricks, because then it hits like 26,000, and that's a story in itself. So you screen grab and you retweet the fact that you're at 26,000 the link. And when I did mine in 2014, you couldn't tag people in the picture. You know, you can now tag 10 people in every picture. So you couldn't do that. So it took 6 months then. Now it took 13 days. But that, again, is there's lots of tools. And I think if we do change this law, I'm certainly going to write a book, one of those books for dummies, where every chapter is how you do it, how you tweet and how you meet an MP. And
that's really good. Like a toolkit. Loads of people.
So I think, you know, so much social media is animal welfare related, from dog eating festivals in China to SeaWorld to... Right now, you've got the orangutans, you've got the ivory ban, and people, A, get angry, and they get frustrated, and they don't know what to do. So if they can pick up a book and go, oh, I can share, and I can tweet, and I can go to my MP, or I can start a campaign or a dog show, then I feel like I've left a toolkit for them that I've learned the hard way. enjoyable way, but really frustrating and quite depressing. Campaigning is very lonely. You know, you're thinking about it all the time. Yeah, and you get brick wall after brick wall after brick wall. And you have this disingenuous nature and behaviour of the charities. And you think, where's the break going to come?
Mm.
And I played a lot of chess as a kid with my dad. And I think it trains your brain to sort of work around, you know, the end game, the end goal. But you work around the obstructions to actually get there in the end. And you've got to be patient. And you've got to learn to you've got to bite your tongue. You can't engage with people that you don't like on Twitter because it makes them relevant.
Mm.
Even blocking people makes them relevant. And I've learned that as well. For a stress-free life, do not engage. Do not
block them, people. That makes them.
Well, they've won. You know, they've got your attention for a millisecond.
Mm.
But if you ignore and you praise the good guys, it's a lot less stressful to live. But it's a lot. You just don't. Yeah, as I say, you don't make the bad people relevant by engaging with them.
And also, if you lose your cool as well, then it looks like
you'll never win. You'll never win that one because their final tweet will always be, "See, I told you."
Yeah.
And you'll never win. So it's better just not to engage and concentrate on the positive people.
And also, it's very. They've got all the time in the world, haven't they, to sit there and respond? But what I was listening to an interview with. Bill Burr the other day, and he said he will engage with people as long as they have their own face, as long as their profile's under their own face, because that is someone that's a person saying this is what I think. Whereas someone who's got, like, we've all seen the guy with, like, well, Superman as his profile picture, he was like, oh, I won't engage with you because you're not coming out and going this is what I think.
Yeah, you're immediately disingenuous.
Yeah,
so yeah, I go along with that.
But what's the other side's argument for that?
Oh, to not do what we want
is
to basically license third parties, so to keep puppies in pet shops and basically keep them being sold by dealers.
So it is money. But all the money we could make.
Well, it's not just it's the money. It's the knock on effect.
People being employed. Yeah. Okay.
But it's the knock on effect of what. Banning an animal from a pet shop, in this case a puppy, would have on the pet industry. That's, for me, that's the number one. And not only are obviously the biggest pet superstore in the chain in the UK against what we're doing, because it could potentially be the end of them being able to sell live animals. And of course, them selling live animals is huge because they make money out of them. They make money out of the accessories that they sell with them. And they also make money out of footfall being created by people coming in to see them and stroke them. So the pet industry and it's all its billions is really panicking at this law. And they've always been against us. And for me, that's why. But there's also the corporate relationships they have with these big charities. Mm. That they're almost, in my opinion, using the charities as stooges to block because of this. Mm. And then you have the charity argument, which is, I think... they do not want their kennels to be bare. And I think also that the way people relinquish their animals these days isn't the same. They go onto Facebook, they go onto Gumtree, they go to smaller rescues, they go to friends.
Mm.
In the olden days, I think they just went to these big rescue centres. So again, the way that whole dynamic works is changed. And I think that they're getting less animals brought to them because I think a lot of people also think they're going to be put to sleep.
That's the third alarm.
That's the third different car alarm.
I think that could be that some of the big organisations trying to sabotage what we're doing, which they're welcome to. But I'm used to it.
Well, amazing progress in the time that.
Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed. And if you know, there's the petition at the moment. Still live, if people want to listen, sign it and share it, the Lucy's Law petition. And also the debate is actually available to watch online as well on the Parliament website, which is on the 21st of May. You can look it up. It was in Westminster Hall. It's 2 hours. It's quite interesting. And it's just to get a feel of how Parliament works. And if you're a dog lover, you're an animal lover, I think you'll find it interesting.
We will share all the links and stuff on our page.
Thank you.
Twitter.
What would be the next... So if you achieved everything... that you just spoke about.
Yeah, Lucy's Law.
What's the next step?
I think next step would be to...
First of all, I think you can probably sit down and have a cup of tea.
May have a cup of tea. A cup of tea, and then think about how to how to roll it out across the world, really. I'd like to do it in America. I'd like to do it in Australia. I'd like to do it in Europe. I'd like it to be a thing that Lucy, the rescue cavalier, this poor little dog who really, really suffered, changes the world for dogs. Yeah, and maybe every other animal as well. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm only doing this because we've never actually spoken about this. This is the first time.
I mean, obviously, you do this. You've done numerous. How many radio interviews do you think?
I've done a few, but I don't know. It's nice when people are genuinely interested in it because, you know, if someone says they're a campaigner or a lobbyist, you don't really know what they do, and especially if they're a paid lobbyist, it's very different. If you're a campaigner and a lobbyist that literally has almost a full-time job and does it in the spare time, goes on a stag do and can't actually enjoy it, goes on a holiday and has to take their laptop and work every evening, you know, it's all-consuming. Mm. You know, the dog show in September, it's a really hard... I mean, now we roll out a template every year and it's a lot easier, but it's a lot of work goes into it. And Bex, who's my pup aid co-director, does all the stalls. You know, it's 85 trade stalls. It's food. It's live music. Mm. It's.
I've been to Pup Aid in London.
It's insane, right?
It's crazy.
And that started in Brighton at Stanmer.
Oh really?
Originally, yeah, it started in Stanmer Park. But we've had, you know, as I said, there's Ricky and Rachel Riley come, and Liam Gallagher's come, and Elle McPherson.
I met Peter Crouch there.
Peter Crouch and Abby Clancy came one year, yeah.
Because that's the second. Because he judged a dog show, didn't he, Liam Gallagher?
Yeah, Liam. Well, funny enough, Liam, he loves dogs. He loves sausage dogs. And
sorry, that's just. Sorry, what?
He's got. He, do you know what, Liam? It's so funny because the persona you see on, you know, is this hard man and he doesn't really care and whatever. And behind closed doors, sorry, Liam, if you're listening, I'm gonna blow your cover. He's such a nice man, and he's so funny as well. We did a photo shoot years ago when I started campaigning, and he signed a guitar that was donated by Gibson, which later got signed by Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton and all sorts of Brian May, and went for auction, and the money went to rescue dogs. And since then, and then I didn't know how to repay Liam Gallagher. How do you give Liam Gallagher something back that's worth something? And we ended up, I said, I can do a school visit at your son's school. So I did. And I for a few years, I went back to Jean's class and did the school visit and the other classes as well. I used to meet Liam at the school gates, and I used to wear an arsehole scarf in those
so
days.
Bizarre.
It was so bizarre. It's so random. And he used to wear his Man City scarf. I was wearing my Arsenal scarf back in the day. And he was like, hey, mate, you know, and there was a time when all the Arsenal players were going to Man City, like Sami Nasri and Clichy, and it was like he would just take the piss out of me at the school gates, and it was so, so random. I was just hanging out with Liam Gallagher at the school gates, and the only way I could repay him was the school visit for his son, which I did for a few years. There's been lots of random things like that along the way. I mean, you know, hanging out with Ricky Gervais, hero of all of ours, I'm sure, and... getting drunk with him and it's weird and if I really want to drop a celebrity name, I will.
Here it comes.
I was a producer of a movie in America called Dog by Dog, and it's about Puppy Mills, which is the American for puppy farms, and it sort of uncovers the, a bit like over here, uncovers the sort of agricultural industry and why that's responsible for puppy farming over there. Because they believe that laws about dogs could lead to laws on sheep and horses and cows. So it's very good. It's on Netflix. Can be watched about an hour and a half. Well worth it. It's not too gory. It's actually just more sort of about corruption behind the scenes in animal welfare. And we premiered it in New York in, I think, 2015, 16. And of course, at the time, I knew Larry David's show was just off Broadway. It's called Fish in the Dark, who he wrote and starred in it. And it was the one day off I had, and I managed to get a ticket last minute. It cost me an absolute fortune. Sat in the theatre watching Larry David on stage, and then waited outside the stage door and met him, and got a signed mug, which nice. I still have in my house as my prized possession. And had a mini chat with Larry David. So, I don't know. It's weird how campaigning, however depressing it can be, 99% of the time is hard work, throws you a little treat either hanging out with Ricky or meeting Larry David, or, you know, hanging out with Brian May, have become very, very good friends. But those are the tiny little perks, or big perks, obviously, but in the bigger picture, it's actually nice to get positives occasionally, because it kind of spurs you on.
Did you feel in a way a little bit like a band when you went over to America? Did you feel like you had to start again almost, or did you already have the connections there? Was it a little bit easier?
No, I was invited to be a producer of the movie, so I kind of just joined in. I was a bit of a fraud really, because I didn't really do much. I was involved with sort of the I don't know, the thought process of the movie. So we premiered it in New York, Philadelphia the next night, then went around America, and I said to the executive producer, I said, can I premiere it in the UK? He said, yeah, of course. So I premiered it in the House of Commons, in one of the big committee rooms overlooking the Thames, and I think it was the second movie ever to be premiered there, certainly the first animal welfare one. We've had 150 guests, and we.
What the first one was?
I don't know. Actually.
Titanic.
It was fascinating, and it just shows that if you just think outside the box, sounds very cliche, and you just be a bit creative, you can do stuff, and you can. I mean, I was a vet who's a film producer premiering my movie in the House of Commons. I mean, what's that about? So it just shows if you think of something, then do it. You know, we'll try and do it. Don't assume that you can't do stuff, because there's always a way.
You've done comedy.
I've done.
How many gigs did you do?
I did the course where I met obviously people like Sean and Ramesh and Barnsley, and our gang. I never did it to do a gig. I was doing it at the time because I was doing a lot of live TV. I was doing Paul O'Grady show on live TV, and it was terrifying. So I was doing it because I just love comedy and always have loved comedy and obsessed with comedy, but also to get my live performing skills sort of a bit better, and also the warm-up exercises weirdly helped getting into that routine of because I remember it was filmed at the BBC TV centre first, then it went to ITV centre even though it was on Channel 4, and you used to be behind the curtain, and there was a full studio audience. It was about 4 or 5 p.m. on Channel 4 live. And I had to take the two celebrity guests and Paul O'Grady around my pet clinic on the stage about every 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Absolutely terrifying, because A, what are you doing on that show, right? B, Paul's being Paul, obviously a legend, brilliant. Celebrities were quite unpredictable. The animals were unpredictable. But I used to enjoy banter with him, and I used to... There was this thing used to get in your head, and I'm sure you've had it before. You think, should I, shouldn't I say something? And I always said it. And it usually went down well, and I used to get an audience laugh. So I guess the closest I've ever done to actual stand-up is when I did the Paul O'Grady show, and I try and do at least one joke in my pet clinic, because obviously I've got to be professional. I'm giving advice, I'm stroking a tortoise, which isn't a euphemism. You know, you have to be fairly professional.
Is that one of your jokes?
Yeah, thank God, no, but it was tortoise related. It was about a tortoise coming out of its shell, which got actually a bigger laugh than I expected.
Standing ovation.
Almost. But yeah, it was a fun time. I did, I think, 5 seasons with him, and he's an exceptionally lovely man. But it was the reason I did the stand-up course was for live performing rather than actual stand-up. But of course, recently, as we know, we've performed together on the comedy game show at the Warren.
Yes, we have.
And yeah, I love it. It's just fun.
On the course that I did years ago, there was a solicitor who wanted to make her points more... I don't know what she said, but she didn't say more funny, which is what I'm going to say
her
now.
Sentences more.
But then there was also a bingo caller. I don't know how... I think he was trying to break out of the bingo calling...
What, on the course? On your course?
Yeah.
I don't remember a bingo caller. We were on the same course.
Okay.
So there was a bingo caller who did lots of really rude jokes.
Inappropriate jokes?
Yeah, sort of sexist, inappropriate. And I was like, dude, you just say the numbers, like, stop fucking around. But he didn't end up doing it that much. But I think that's interesting, isn't it, that someone can go, I need to be better at public speaking because I'm a bingo caller.
How weird.
Yeah, because you think that's an established bingo caller trope. Maybe he was just sick of all the Jim Davidson bingo callers.
He was trying to modernise his act.
He wanted to be the Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
This game,
very wordy bingo caller.
Yeah.
Game of bingo's gone on for about 5 hours.
He was inventing anti-bingo. Almost suggesting the numbers but not saying them. And deconstructing these numbers.
Yeah, it didn't really work because no one ever won. They just thought they did.
Less than 3 overweight women. Oh, that must be 88. So yeah, let's do it.
Right, that is time for our first feature, which is Plots That About. Plots that a plot, 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 that about. So, I give you and Joe a film title each, and these are real film titles.
Of course they are.
And you have to tell us what you think the plot is about, and feel free to embellish as much as possible.
You have to only use, you can say who plays the characters, and you are only allowed to use people you've actually met. I don't know whether there's any left to mention.
I have dropped a fair few names, but I assure you, there's a fair few more.
This plot is going to be 45 minutes long.
At least. And they're just the extras. Yeah.
Supporting cast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, Joe, your film is Body Parts.
Okay, Body Parts is a film about the plot. All right, okay. The opening scene of Body Parts is... Oh, mate. Because it's body, everything in my head is going somewhere that I... can't go. Body Parts is, it's about a struggling playwright who's played by Jason Statham.
Nice.
Okay, and he's been his landlord is threatening to chuck him out of his flat, which is located in Bisbee, Texas. And his landlord is played by Dean Gaffney, which, if I'm not mistaken, is not the first Dean Gaffney appearance in this game.
I think he's made several.
Do you think? I can't remember which ones they are, but yeah, so Dean Gaffney's going, "You gotta get the money!" You know, and he's coming around to Jason Statham's house, and Jason's like, "Look, you know, I'm a struggling playwright," you know, and he's like, so he's trying to write, he's like, "I don't have the money." He goes, "You've got till the end of the month," you know. And he's got two heavies with him that are both played by both of the heavies are played by not the young Haley Joel Osment. I'm bringing back all the people who've been in this before. But you know how now, like that film Legend, they have two actors playing the same. It's just two, not young, old Haley Joel Osment.
Haley Joel Osment now.
Flanking Dean Gaffney.
Okay.
And they're like, they're holding pineapples as a threat.
Yep.
They're not, maybe the, could be the grenade, the old name for a grenade. Because they used to call them pineapples, didn't they?
I have no idea.
Did they not?
But all I'm thinking of with Dean Gaffney in it is Wellard. Is this the Wellard era? Because keep it dog related.
Wellard is very much the threat.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, "Well, you know, it's got to be two. Am I doing his voice right? It's got to be. did I say $2,000 or $10,000? $10,000. He's got, or who will come back with a dog? But he doesn't say Wellard. He just says the dog because you know, because it's Gaffney.
Yeah.
It's going to be Wellard. So he's got to write. He's in the middle of writing this play, and he's written the treatment, and the play is called Body, and the film is about searching for all the parts, which is body parts, and he now has a race against time, sort of like the Blues Brothers.
It's exactly the same as the Blues Brothers. What you've talked about.
I've seen this film.
Right.
he wants to cast, in the Blues Brothers vein, he wants to cast all the old characters. He wants to get the band back together, if you will. So he goes around all his old acting buddies and they've all moved on. And it is every member of S Club 7. So eventually, is this, have I lost everything?
No, this is perfect.
Everyone keeping up?
Yeah, I'm bad.
So he goes back.
I'm just fearing someone's actually going to steal this idea and actually do it.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, it's amazing.
I tell you what, Mark, that is the fear with all of them.
Right.
And then, so basically he gets everyone together and they all do the play, and then Parts is a huge hit, as you can imagine. And then he pays his flat back, and the lead role is played by Larry David. So there you go. Body Parts.
Excellent.
What certificate would you give that?
I'd give it an 18, because so there's some fucked up shit in the middle.
And because the actual parts are dug up and revealed, probably with the help of Wellard.
That's correct. Probably with the help of Wellard. I don't know why you're giving it. Why the bloody hell not, mate?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Give him a job.
Mark, your film is The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Is he a famous doctor?
Not according to this. Do you know what? 24% score on Rotten Tomatoes.
24?
Yeah.
Pretty
low.
I don't know what my movie's got. No, it's fair. The Island of Dr. Moreau is it's a beautiful place, actually. I went there once. I've been friends with him for years, Dr. Moreau. Actually. He was doing medicine when I was doing veterinary at Edinburgh. We were friends at uni. We all were, the professional medical people. We were there for 5 years, and you get close to people. And he always had these... I remember going around his room sometimes to get drunk before we went out, and he used to drink Kay Cider and Merry Down and Tennent's Extra Super. And what's the other one? Special Brew, because I went to Edinburgh Uni. I always used to go in his room, and we used to have these drinks before we went out, and he had these island pictures on his wall. I was like, what the fuck, you know? I said, why have you got, you know, most people have got Bob Marley or Lenny Kravitz.
So are you playing yourself?
Kind of, at the moment, yeah. This is a flashback.
To be fair, we've never had a guest that said they've cast themselves immediately.
It's only because I know Dr. Moreau. Otherwise, I would have cast someone else. But this just so happens. I mean, I picked number one, and thank God I did. Right? we used to hang out drinking Special Brew and Merry Down, and sometimes bottles of port to get drunk quickly as students. And these pictures of these beautiful islands on the wall, and sand and coconut trees and stuff. And I said, "What? Why haven't you got Betty Blue, 37 degrees in the morning poster on your wall, or Bob Marley Legend, the original?" And he said, "To be honest with you, I'm more interested in islands." And then we kind of, you know, you graduate and you work and you lose touch. And then recently I got an email because someone in our group had sadly had a baby, and and there was a bit of a get together, and Dr. Moreau was in that email chain, and I thought, you know what, I wonder what he's doing now. And of course I emailed, and it, you know, didn't respond for I think about 3 years. And I obviously forgot about it, and then randomly I got an email, and he hadn't responded because he'd been on his island, which hasn't any internet access. But he'd gone to the mainland to get supplies and popped into an internet cafe from the 90s, which obviously where he was living was relatively new.
Is this where the beach picks up?
Maybe.
That's the beginning.
That's the sequel. So we were in internet contact. So that's, I was aware of Dr. Moreau on his island, and the thing is, he lives on his own on an island with no people, i.e. no patients, so it's a bit of a weird existence, because for me it's a waste of a degree. And I said, go to the mainland, treat some people, make them better or worse, depends how good you are. If worse, then head back quicker to your island. We've been chatting ever since. So yeah, it's not so much as a movie as it should be, but I'm sure they'll make a movie of it. So in a way, this is a movie from the future that hasn't actually been written yet, but I've already written this whole plot down and posted it to myself, so it's copyrighted. So if anyone does steal it, they'll have me to answer for it.
and you know the legal system.
I'm learning it quickly. So
I will sue.
It's a movie plot from the future.
Okay.
About the future.
Starring yourself.
Yeah, at the moment, I haven't cast anyone yet.
If you could have anyone to play you,
brilliant. If I could have anyone to play me, who would it be? Oh my god. It's a very good question. I'll ask you. Who would you think would play me?
Good question.
And don't say Omar Jalili, because that is the looks wise. I get that. I do get that sometimes.
Bruce Willis.
That's unbelievable.
What?
You get
it. It's true.
Is it?
Well, people go, oh, you look like me. Yeah, mainly family.
Maybe Ahmed.
Yeah.
And maybe, he says his full name.
Maybe his family as well. But yeah, he's my sort of celebrity looky liking. Right. It used to be Sebastian Veron, you know, who played in the soccer raid on the weekend. He hasn't got fatter. His face is still narrow. So maybe he'd play me. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Juan Sebastian Veron in his acting debut
with the island of Dr. Moreau. In fact, the island is off South America, so it'd be closer for him to visit his family as well.
Perfect.
Everyone wins.
Very considerate.
Sure.
Well, wow, the doctor has spoken.
There you go.
James.
Right.
Over to you.
Wow. Okay. So. I took some notes and everything.
So, very good producer.
Top of the list, never invite Mark back.
He has met.
Point two, all of the above.
Well, I'll start with body parts. Wellard was in it, so I was quite happy there's a dog. I'm a big dog fan, so that was extra points for you there. I did also like the fact that it wasn't about body parts. It was a play called Body. He's looking for
parts.
That's
the fringe that is still bleeding into my soul.
That was great. That was amazing. Yeah, so I liked it. It was good. It was good. Now, I did...
She doesn't sound wowed.
What does she want?
Hashtag justice for Joe.
Asking too much. Now, with the island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes.
I liked the fact it's a movie from the future that hasn't... I mean, that's quite a unique spin on it.
I wasn't going to tell anyone, to be honest with you, but you made me.
Invested as well in, like, the relationship.
We're good friends,
I
like what can I say?
When Mark asked... Is Dr. Moreau famous? Alex looked at his phone again as if the answer was
correct. I'll explain why in a second.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Listeners, I just tap my nose as if to indicate I have more information than I'm letting on.
Well, I'm going to say, shockingly...
I meant this is mine. Now.
The winner is Mark because... I'm really intrigued to see how this film's going to turn out.
I think we all are.
Yeah, especially, exactly.
I just want to see how Juan Sebastian Veron acts.
I'm wanting this to happen.
I know you are. I can see you nodding. For all the for the benefit of the listeners, there's a lot of nodding going on.
Congratulations, Mark.
You are the winner
of this week's
Thank
episode.
You very much.
What's that about?
Did turn a lot of the things on their head. I was like, wow, I've done this.
It was pretty impressive.
Okay,
we've got. I'm going to reveal what the real plots are to those films. Joe, body parts. A man fears he is possessed by the soul of a serial killer whose arm he received in an experimental transplant. And
why such a low score? That's
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, right.
That was 40% Rotten Tomatoes. Now this is a 24% Rotten Tomatoes film, and this is the reason why I was saying is this doctor famous? Because I'm very surprised that this actor was in a film with a Rotten Tomato score of 24%. The Island of Dr. Moreau, an English UN negotiator, David Thewlis. That's not the one I'm referring to, becomes stranded in the tropics with a mad scientist played by Marlon Brando, who makes half-human, half-beasts. Okay. Tries to interfere.
Okay.
I don't remember that Marlon Brando.
I wonder what facilities he's got on an island to do that, perform that sort of intricate surgery. I guess I'd have to watch the movie.
But of course, you already know Dr. Moran.
There's the carrot. I do. I'm gonna email him and maybe I'll get a response in the next 4 or 5 years. He's still around. I mean, you know.
It's nice that in the peak of Marlon Brando's fame, he went back to do a degree at Edinburgh University.
Right.
You're never done.
What was it in?
Well, I'm obviously taking the piss. Cause
Oh dear!
You did a degree in taking the piss. So urology, presumably. Urology, yeah.
On that note, nephrology. Congratulations, Mark.
Thanks.
What's that about?
Is it normal to get really bloated from a cup of tea? Because I cannot describe how much pain I'm in.
So now we're getting into the main body of the podcast, which would,
literally
the body is always Alex's because he has several health ailments and somehow on everyone manages to slip one in. So now you're bloated now.
Yeah, I've had a full cup of tea and I feel a little bit bloated.
Did the tea have milk in it?
Yeah, do you reckon it's lactose intolerant?
I think it's definitely related, yeah. It's definitely a possibility.
Do you want to stick your hand up his arm?
Can we wait till we're off air?
Diagnose me, Mark.
Diagnose me. Yeah, we'll wait till we're off it because, you know.
Jack, that's a possibility. Could I be lactose intolerant?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, definitely. Now that he's said it once, you will definitely think that you are from this day.
Well, the way to move forward with this is to have a little exclusion diet.
Mm-hmm.
Buy some soya, oat milk, okay, or almond milk and try it and see how you feel after that.
Okay.
But I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
And so will your toilet.
You even said that like a campaign slogan.
Right? Strap line.
So what else is going on, Alex? Anything else wrong with you at the moment?
You've got
a very nice jumper that I think we need to highlight.
Do you think so?
I love that. Is it a t-shirt?
It's a long sleeve t-shirt. Don't worry, listeners will see this in the photo we take at the end.
Oh, exciting. Let's take a photo at the end.
Oh, did we not tell you that bit?
No.
I would say that's a thin jumper.
Yeah, it's, you know, too hot for the day, but well done.
Pleasant for the evening?
No, it looks like I'd say it's a birthday jumper. Well, for you going to someone else, it's not your own.
Oh. I was going to say, it feels like my birthday having Mark here.
Oh, it will in a minute when
just
I give you
me to Ricky.
when I give you your medical exam when we finish recording, it'll be the best present ever.
Have you seen Ricky recently?
Yeah, I saw him the other day. I went to see his work in progress for his new tour. And
where was his work in progress for his new tour?
It was the Finchley Arts Depot, and I met him beforehand to do some campaigny pictures and have a chat with him about. I like to bring him up to speed with everything because he's like one of our, if not our main supporter. Saw his work in progress, which is obviously going to be very good. But it seems to me he's reached a point where he's now he's just writing stuff to shock himself.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff, but like, wow. And you can see the look on his face is like, okay. And Sean McLaughlin was also warming up for him, and so was Brian Gittins.
Two past guests of ours.
And two absolute legends. And yeah, he was on good form, Ricky, and got some right treats in store for you. So it's the next Humanity Tour, really. It's called it's called Supernature.
Because the last one was 2018. Is that... No, was it 2017?
Well, it was a year, wasn't it? The whole year of 2017 was his Humanity Tour. And now I guess the next one will be in 2019. It's usually a year or 18 months, isn't it?
But he's working in progress for it now. So how many people, how big was the room?
I don't know, 400 people? Mm. It was tiny.
That's nice, isn't it?
It was really nice. I went to his work in progress for the Humanity one as well.
Oh, really?
In the same venue, yeah. And it's amazing how it changes. Because then I saw it in, I think I saw it in Brighton. And then I saw it obviously on Netflix. Yeah, there you go. And I love it. I love the evolution of comedy, of stand-up, and how things are tweaked.
I've never turned up so sweaty to a gig in my life.
Well, it was an interesting question because very kindly he guest-listed me, but I didn't realise he'd actually guested me for a few rather than just me. So I had plus two.
Mm.
So I was like, oh my God, it starts soon.
Who probably doesn't have plans 20 minutes before a show?
And they all had plans. So thank you.
Thank you.
It was great. I mean, you know, it's generous of him to invite me to these things. And no, it's I love stand up and I love all comedy. So,
do you remember when we saw that Nick Helm show where he had, was it a tray of tango on a spinny table, and you'd he had a tray of fizzy drinks on the table, and you'd spin the table around. You'd have to pick one. I can't remember which one it was. It was like a Fanta or something, and the whole game was to get a Fanta. And then he'd done a preview at the Caroline, and I can't remember who it was. I think it was you that was talking to Cliff. The Caroline pub in Brighton does a lot of Edinburgh previews, and someone was talking to Cliff afterwards and like, oh, I saw his show in Edinburgh, it was great. And he was like, oh yeah, no, I saw it here, it was quite good. He goes, he had the spin with the I love the thing with the tray and all the spinny drinks, and it went on for ages. And he was like, no, I didn't do any of that. Literally, just before Edinburgh, gone, if I get a spinny table.
So many times I've seen that with Edinburgh previews, where it's just like the show that I've seen the preview not that long before the actual Fringe, and you go and see it, and it's like, none of that's in it. Yeah. How much material did you generate?
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so he's amazing, but yeah, he it's you know. To have someone who's a comedy idol, I mean, Ricky's huge, obviously, but also to have him on your side for doing all the other stuff blows my mind. And he's genuinely one of the nicest people I've ever met. And he loves animals so much. Mm. And he hates injustice. Doesn't mind it to people. And I'm not that keen on it either, bothered about it either. But for animals, if there's and he brings it into the end of humanity. You know, he talks about the dog meat festival. He talks about petitions, and that was the first one he helped get to 100,000. Was our one. He likes to be part of change. He also likes to. He doesn't like to be hoodwinked by these big organisations, and he genuinely likes to be part of the solution to helping animals. He's a. I don't use the word wonderful a lot, but he's a wonderful man. Yeah, and I thank him for all his help.
Like it.
He really is. He genuinely
is. Also a very competent interview guest, which makes him, you know, he's not afraid of an argument.
No.
Like after he did that award show and he slated all the celebrities, he was quite happy to go on. I think it was Piers Morgan just sort of like seemed to just suck up to him for about 45 minutes. But like, also if it was someone more difficult, I think he'd be all right. I've heard him have like loads of really good interviews where he's just basically telling people to fuck off without actually doing it. He's got quite a good way of.
Oh, he's unbelievably clever. I mean, on Twitter, you can see how he can. He's a wordsmith. But the interviews that I find fascinating with him, I don't know if you remember the Channel 4 shows that they did with him interviewing his idols.
Mm.
So Christopher Guest, Larry David, Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
And it was funny to watch him starstruck to some of those great, great names. And
I remember watching the Christopher Guest one.
Yeah, and it was funny just watching Ricky almost out of his comfort zone because he was in awe of these people. Mm. And they were obviously massive influences on The Office and on Extras. Mm. I mean, Larry Sanders' show was groundbreaking in its time. So was Spinal Tap, and so was, you know, the Best in Show.
I met Harry Shearer 3 years ago. Really nice guy.
What was he doing in Brighton?
He was doing a play.
Okay.
A very good play.
Comedy play or straight play?
I think it was straight. It was a dark comedy, but mostly straight.
And his voice is just...
It's Principal Skinner is his default voice.
Okay, that's interesting.
Ish. But yeah, no, he was absolutely lovely.
Did you get
a... I was a little bit starstruck. Got a selfie with him.
It's good to be starstruck. I think I'm only starstruck of people that genuinely have influenced me and made me laugh.
Well, that two of my favourite film is Spinal Tap, and one of my favourite shows is The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Two of my biggest comedy influences, he is the common theme in both of those.
Definitely, definitely.
He's a very funny man. Who would you, apart from Ricky, who would you say is your comedy hero?
I've met my hero. He's dead now. I met Peter Cook briefly. Many, many years ago, I think I was about 21 in Hampstead in a cafe called The Dome, and he was on another table, and I was obsessed with Derek and Clive. I was since I was 12, since my godfather gave me a cassette for my Sony Walkman on a flight to Spain on a family holiday.
What's
and I,
a cassette, Mark?
Right. Go to the Brighton Museum. They've probably got one there. I was fascinated by Derek and Clive, and I didn't understand a lot of it. I think it still works. Obviously, it's the most inappropriate thing that's probably ever been recorded, way ahead of its time. I was obsessed with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. And then I met Peter Cook, and I was terrified because he had a bit of a reputation. He's obviously a drinker; that's what he died of.
Yeah.
But he was a big, big guy, and I was sort of a little guy. I was skinny in those days. And he was on the next table, and I went over to him, and I got his autograph, and I had a chat. And of course, one of the most incredible comedies I've ever known is Mr. Jolly Lives Next Door, which was one of the comic strip presents shows on Channel 4, and it was him as a cameo. Nicholas Parsons was in it, obviously Rick and Aid, and it was at that era of the, you know, the alternative comedy and stand up and the Comedy Store, and he died shortly after, and to meet someone who is that influential, I still think he's the greatest comic of all time, Peter Cook, and the annoying thing is, I got him to sign the menu. That's why I know it's the Dome, and I have it in my head because he signed it with a little picture of himself smoking a cigarette with a bit of smoke coming out, and I still can't find it to this day. Oh. And it's in my parents' house somewhere, and I've looked and I've looked and I've looked, and I know it's in there, but I just haven't found it yet. And it'll be, as well as my Larry David signed mug, it'll be my prized possession. But I've met Peter Cook, Larry David, and Ricky. I guess Christopher Guest would be an idol as well, but those three for me are, I'd love to have met Kenny Everett. I think he was also one of the greatest comedians of all time. But yeah, it's I love comedy, and I think everyone should have comedy in their lives. And the thing is, a decent comedy, you can. I watched The Office again the other day, and it just gets better. And that was 2001 was the first series, like 17 years ago. Still works. Every single second of that comedy works. Still relevant, and the timing, and the casting, and the writing, and the performing. I think is literally genius, and you can't watch these things enough.
Right, Mark.
Yeah.
Plug away. What would you like to plug?
What I'd like to plug. Pup Aid, obviously, is the big celebrity judged fun dog show, which is in London on the 1st of September. It's free entry.
And what's the Twitter for that?
At Pup Aid, PUPAID. So follow Pup Aid. If you want to get involved in the campaigning side of things, then hashtag Lucy's Law. There's actually a microsite on the Mirror's website, so it's mirror.co.uk/Lucy's Law. But just, you know, just put Lucy's Law into Twitter. Sign the petition, watch the debate, feel part of change, especially if you're a dog owner, dog lover, animal lover, hate injustice to animals. The more the merrier, really. And I think what we've done campaigning-wise is we've sort of, it's people power, and we've shown that there is a way of actually, hopefully, again, fingers crossed, touch wood, changing stuff for animals by just, I don't know, the power of the mob in a way. It's just getting as many people from different sectors as possible to put pressure on the government, which includes MPs, celebrities and the public, to change stuff for the better. So hopefully when you're listening to this, you'll be wanting to get involved. And maybe even in September we'll be able to announce it in Primrose Hill in London that we've changed the law and the future is a lot brighter for our,
awesome,
this country's dogs.
And we'll post up all the links to all of those on.
And I'm Mark the Vet on Twitter if anyone cares. at Mark the Vet, MarkTheVet, and I've got a Facebook page as well, which is also Mark the Vet. So if you want to get involved, get in touch, throw some weird animal names at me, then I'm
he's very lovely, he'll answer them.
I'll get them right because I'll obviously Google them. So yeah, get involved and be part of change.
Joe, do you have anything to plug?
Yes, lots of selfish things. Yeah, I do. I'm going to the Edinburgh Festival and no one's going to come. So I would really like some human beings to sit in chairs, please.
Where are you performing, Joe?
Moriarty's Bar in Edinburgh, of course.
Yeah, but where is Moriarty's Bar?
That is... that's a good question. And one that by the end of this Edinburgh, I will definitely know the answer.
We'll post up links to it as well.
Thanks, man. Yeah, no, I think that's it.
Whole month? You're doing the whole month?
2nd to the 26th.
And what time are you on?
4:45, which is a good time.
It is a good time.
It is a good time, and it also means that I can lay in. The show will be good. I'll be remembering it and not reading it off a piece of paper, so we won't have any of the problems that happened.
Is it the same show that I saw the other day?
It is the same show you saw.
Which was absolutely fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
It was awesome. Very, very, very good show.
Yeah.
So you should all go and see it.
Yeah.
Please, for the love of God.
And what's it called?
It's called Joe Foster, Let's Get Cynical.
And where can people find out more about it?
People can find out more about it in the Edinburgh Fringe programme.
Is that out yet and online?
It's actually, I've got a copy right behind you. Wow. So yeah, do you want to have a look through? And yeah. Alex, any organisations that you'd like to champion at this time?
Just like to give a shout out to the Pavilion Surgery. They do some great work. They're very patient with me, and I'll be seeing them before they know it.
You've seen a couple of specialists, haven't you?
Yep,
seen a couple. Got you in there.
Yep. I've got an appointment booked in a couple of weeks.
Pavilion Surgery, be part of change.
Where are they?
Opposite.
If you're feeling if you live in Brighton. And you're feeling ill.
I genuinely couldn't recommend them highly
enough. Yeah, but people need to know where to go.
It's Google Pavilion Surgery.
Sure.
Yeah. Been very patient with me. I'm hard work, as you guys will all vouch for.
For sure. Yeah.
For all new listeners, just thank you. Tell a friend. Subscribe, share it.
And I'd like to say thank you to you all for inviting me on this show, because I do listen to you, and I always think the guests aren't that good. So I just couldn't wait to get on and just keep that theme going. If anything, make it worse.
Thank you very much for coming on, Mark. It's been a pleasure having
thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Jade. That's all from us. Bye.
See you later.
Thanks, guys.
World Cup championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.